This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
People can't plow, people can't rear cattle, their livelihoods are really shattered. They live in abject poverty.
That's Botswana Minister of Natural Resources, Conservation and Tourism, Kitso Mokaila, explaining that growing elephant numbers are hurting human communities. Also, Somalia says it does not want to hurt relations with Kenya after its officials were denied entry over a territorial issue. And we continue our series about the land legacy of South Africa's apartheid system, which ended more than 25 years ago. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's a lot more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, early results from Malawi's Electoral Commission show that current President Peter Mutharika has about 40% of the vote. The head of the opposition Malawi Congress Party, Lazarus Chikwara, has about 35%, followed by Deputy President Saulos Chilima with about 18%. But VOA reporter Lamek Messina says areas where the opposition Malawi Congress Party has strong support have not yet reported their results. Some international observers have issued statements calling the election free and peaceful, but they are withholding the description of fair until after the release of final results. To tell us more about the election, we speak with VOA reporter Lamek Messina in Blantyre about how many areas have ballots that remain to be counted by the Malawi Electoral Commission and other issues.
The Malawi Electoral Commission has said about 2,500 areas remain uncounted in areas which are believed to be stronghold of the opposition Malawi Congress Party. While areas which are remain uncounted, which are believed to be strong base of the ruling DPP party, are 200. So in that context, in that scenario, it means the opposition Malawi Congress Party is still having an upper hand, because most of the areas which has remained uncounted belong to them.
Will any of the sides get a majority, do you think?
But it's still unpredictable which side should get the majority. It's believed and it is seen by many that maybe the opposition NCP can get the majority, considering the number of votes which remain uncounted in areas in which it has a stronghold.
Have any foreign observers given statements yet? Have there been any assessments of the fairness of the vote?
Yes, in the morning, three, if not four, foreign observers missions gave their preliminary statements about the conduct of the elections from the campaigning up to this vote counting. But what is common among them all is they start saying that the electoral process has been free and peaceful. But they say they can't say it was fair because the votes are still being counted. So the word fair has been withheld. They say they will talk about the fairness after the counting of the votes and after the release of the results.
What should we expect now, and when will official results be released?
Okay, what the Electoral Commission has said is that the results will take place within 8 days after the voting. In this case, the voting started on 21st, so the results are expected on 29th.
That was VOA reporter Lamek Messina speaking with us from Blantyre. Sudan's public prosecutors have called for the dismissal of the director of the National Intelligence and Security Service. after agents prevented police from arresting former security chief Salah Abdallah, known also as Salah Ghosh. The case has raised questions about whether certain people are above the law in Sudan. Naba Mohideen reports from Khartoum.
The failure to arrest former intelligence chief Salah Ghosh has caused alarm among protesters and analysts. Ghosh was the head of the National Intelligence and Security Service until he resigned in April, days after longtime President Omar al-Bashir was ousted by the military. The prosecutor's office said Ghosh was to be questioned over an account containing more than over $1 million, 46 million Sudanese pounds, which was only accessible to him. But his guards blocked his arrest Tuesday, saying they didn't receive an arrest warrant in advance. Political analyst Al-Fatih Mahmoud. Mahmoud said arresting Ghosh is important for protesters, as he was responsible for repressing demonstrators, and he has all of the Bashir regime's corruption files. Former President Bashir is already facing charges of incitement and involvement in the killing of protesters. The Sudanese protest erupted in December over bread prices, but quickly morphed into calls for Bashir to step down after 30 years in power. Dozens were killed during a failed government crackdown, and more have died in the recent weeks in clashes with security forces. Protesters continue to hold a sit-in outside military headquarters in Khartoum. One of the demonstrators, Muhammad Umar, expressed his frustration about the failed attempt to arrest Ghosh. In my opinion, when the rank is higher, that means there is the power of taking decision, the orders of shooting or making any violations, he says. It's difficult to determine the soldier who fired, but it's obvious to say which agency issued the orders. It's a top priority to arrest Ghosh, to sustain the prestige of law. Meanwhile, the lead protest group, the Sudan Professionals Association, continues to negotiate with army leaders over who will control a proposed joint civilian and military transitional government. The SPA has called for a million-person march on Thursday and threatened a nationwide strike if the military doesn't yield power. Naba Mohideen for VOA News, Khartoum.
The Somali government says it's not ready to take any action that could threaten its relationship with its neighbor, Kenya. This week, a group of Somali government officials and diplomats were denied entry to Kenya. There has been a simmering tension between the two nations over potential offshore oil deposits. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports.
In a leaked protest letter, the Somali government raised concerns about what it called a Kenyan decision to deny entry visas to some lawmakers and diplomats who had planned to attend a European Union meeting in Nairobi on Tuesday. Kenya's Foreign Affairs Minister, Monica Juma, said she wasn't aware of the incident and says she'll be surprised if anyone with a valid visa is denied entry. The incident was likely related to a dispute over which country controls 100,000 square kilometers of Indian Ocean, believed to hold oil and gas deposits. In February, Kenya recalled its ambassador to Somalia because of the disagreement. Somalia filed a complaint against Kenya in the International Court of Justice in 2014, saying it had exhausted all other avenues of finding a solution to the dispute. In an interview with VOA, Somalia's Foreign Affairs Minister Ahmed Issa Awad said his country would leave the matter to the court. On the issue of maritime dispute, it is in the court, Awad says. Somali government and its people stand on the issue is that is a court matter and there will be no negotiation and bargaining on that issue. We want that matter to remain like that, he says. But Awad added Somalia does not want to be a party to any problem with Kenyan brothers and neighbours. When Somalia filed its complaint, Kenya filed a preliminary objection saying the memorandum of understanding signed between the two countries had avenues of dispute resolution. But the ICJ in 2017 ruled it has jurisdiction on the matter and ordered the countries to submit its arguments. Maritime law expert Wambua Mosili says the dispute resolution route taken by Somalia is different from the rest of the countries in the region.
The practice of the states within the East African region has always been agreement. Tanzania agreed with Kenya, they fixed their border. Tanzania agreed with Mozambique, they fixed their boundary. Mauritius and Seychelles agreed, and they fixed their boundaries. So the state practice has always been in this region that states agree on their border rather than take the matter to the court.
Kenya is one of five African countries with troops in Somalia fighting militant group Al-Shabaab. Kenya also has at least 300,000 Somali refugees. Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
A civil rights group in South Africa says illegal occupations of property are increasing significantly in the country. The AfriForum organization claims a plan by the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, to expropriate land without compensating owners has given criminals the incentive to invade private property. AfriForum is among a number of organizations that intends to fight the plan on several fronts this year. Darren Taylor reports.
President Cyril Ramaphosa says he won't tolerate land grabs and that the police will prosecute invaders. But one of AfriForum's senior officers, Ernst Roots, says any such orders aren't being followed.
If you listen to the state president and you compare that to what's happening on ground level, it's as if it's two different worlds. We see people illegally occupying land and we see the police standing there saying to us that they're not going to do anything about this.
AfriForum has in the recent past obtained court orders for action against land grabbers. Roots says his group seeks to protect all minorities in South Africa, not just the white landowners who feel most threatened by the ANC's proposed law.
Minorities are being persecuted. AfriForum is taking a firm stand for the rights of minority communities. And of course, the ruling party who is doing the persecution or the discrimination is uncomfortable with this, and they are trying to discredit the work that we are doing by trying to portray us as a racist organization or an organization with some sinister motive.
The ANC describes land expropriation without compensation as one of the greatest steps towards racial and economic equality in the country. Roots calls it the gravest threat ever to democracy in South Africa and says AfriForum opposes the plan because it's racist and discriminatory.
If you are white in South Africa and you own land, then by definition you are an illegitimate owner of that property.
Roots maintains that groups who want to confiscate land owned by whites are misguided, ill-informed, or willfully ignorant.
They seem to be under the impression that all black people in South Africa were the victims of dispossession, and all white people participated in these dispossessions, and it happened across the entire surface of South Africa. Not one of those three comments are true.
AfriForum says the ANC wants to expropriate land to cover up for its failure to create a more equal society. He blames the ANC's inability to govern efficiently, despite a promising start under Nelson Mandela in 1994.
For a few years, the economy grew and South Africa became a better place. And then once the ANC's socialist policies came into play, the economy started declining, and they are desperately looking for a scapegoat. They are desperately trying.
A government-appointed commission has found that mismanagement and graft are major barriers to effective land reform. Root says the ANC should encourage victims of apartheid-era land dispossession to file claims to territory they believe to be theirs.
Then there should be a proper investigation, and if they can prove that their forefathers or their tribe lived on that property and they were dispossessed illegitimately, then there should be land reform. The land should go to the community, and whoever currently sits on the land who has invested in that land should be compensated with taxpayers' money, and that's unfortunate, but I think...
AfriForum insists that the ruling party wants land reform to gain unprecedented access to citizens' wealth.
The South African government already owns more than 4,000 farms. Of all the land the ANC government has acquired since they came to power, only 6% of those properties have been transferred into private ownership thereafter. So this is not about...
President Ramaphosa says his administration intends to transfer large tracts of state-owned land to poor black people before it considers expropriating land from private individuals. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
In In the Gambia, the government says it won't be hosting the Organization of the Islamic Cooperation Summit, which was to take place in Banjul in November. The government blames lack of infrastructure and the necessary logistics. Reporter Paten Dariam Bai has the details.
With barely less than 6 months before the summit date, the government says it doesn't have enough time to finish needed infrastructure improvements. The government says it intends to construct a dual carriageway, a five-star hotel, and a VIP lounge at the Banjul International Airport, and to revamp the country's energy sector. The Gambia was granted permission to host the summit during the OIC's 2016 meeting. A local secretariat opened in Banjul in February 2018. Its mandate included mobilizing the needed resources. Saudi Arabia will host this year, and the Gambia hopes to take its turn in 2022. Esa Bokar C works as a public relations officer at the local OIC secretariat. C explains why the postponement is needed.
The reason behind it is that the government of the Gambia underpins the importance of infrastructure development more than just hosting an event with projects completed halfway in suspense and pending and all that. No, because the priority here is not only the conference, but it's also the well-being of the Gambia as a country and its citizens.
She says there are precedents. He says Morocco, Egypt, and Senegal have in the past asked the OIC for more time to prepare for a summit.
It's been deferred and Saudi Arabia is going to host it. And Saudi's role in this whole thing is just like it's religious and administrative at the same time because they have the infrastructure in place.
She also disagreed with critics who claim the government has failed its people by seeking the postponement.
What was going to be bad is to be removed out of the equation. At least we have done our best to remain on the equation until it is a fixed date that 2022 we are going to host it. That's not easy, you know, especially with all these lobbying going on. Every other government wants to host it. It's not easy to achieve that.
Pas Samba Jow is a Gambian human rights activist.
I think most people who've been paying attention knew that there was no way that the Gambia was able to host such a conference. We were not ready. The infrastructure was not there, and I don't think they were prepared for it. So, no, definitely, I was not surprised that it was postponed.
Jow criticized the government for not delaying a public statement on the situation until the media reported the story.
The problem with this government is every time they try to spin, they create more confusion for people and for themselves. So I'm not buying their explanation. And the sad thing, why did it have to take the government close to 2 weeks for them to come up with a press release about something that was all over the place?
Bashamba Diallo is the Diaspora Secretary General for the Opposition Gambia Democratic Congress Party, GDC. Diallo thinks that the government should take full responsibility for the postponement.
The government has a responsibility in it, and I would definitely apportion blame on the government, not entirely, but an overwhelming blame should be apportioned to the government for mishandling the entire thing.
The OIC has 57 member states. The summit is held every 3 years. For VOA Africa, this is Pandering by reporting.
Botswana Minister of Natural Resources, Conservation and Tourism, Kitso Mokaila, says his government has lifted its hunting ban to address a growing human-wildlife conflict. At a news conference today in the capital, Mokaila said the cabinet had approved decisions to lift the trophy hunting ban yesterday. As Martin Ngwai reports, Mokaila says the cabinet rejected recommendations to kill elephants, but instead will accept controlled hunting through acceptable quotas. The minister says communities are feeling the effects of rising wildlife numbers, particularly elephants, and are living in poverty. He says the government will ensure more citizens participate in the trophy hunting business.
During the consultation, a whole host of recommendations came out. And I want to speak first to the one that we did not recommend to Cabinet, because the decision was made yesterday in Cabinet. The one recommendation we did not accept your cabinet did not accept is the issue of culling. Culling is a mass killing trying to reduce numbers. That was never going to be feasible, and that has never been the objective. The objective was to manage. And when we talk of hunting, in the history of Botswana hunting, as we've been hunting since wherever we started, we have never exceeded 400 elephants in any particular year. It has always been 200 and something, but even generally less than 300. So when we talk of hunting, we talk of controlled hunting managed by the Department of Wildlife and National Parks and scientifically arrived at quotas.
To repeat, the minister says communities are feeling the effects of rising wildlife numbers, particularly elephants, and are living in poverty. He says the government will ensure more citizens participate in the trophy hunting business.
Hard hit. People are losing lives. People can't plow. People can't rear cattle. Their livelihoods are really shattered. They live in abject poverty. So, in recognition of that, the recommendation was that we do that. It recommended also, the other recommendation was that we should bring back hunting, and hunting should be reinstated in designated concession hunting areas. And that is what the government of Botswana has agreed to do. They said there should be an equal distribution of citizen hunting quota to try to spread the wealth.
He says there is no need for anyone to doubt Botswana's conservation strategies, as they had resulted in growing wildlife numbers and not a decline.
Conservation is in our DNA. We have never been reckless, and we will never be reckless. So now I want the world to understand fully that our responsibility to conservation has not changed. But our responsibility for our people as well has not changed, and we must make them part of the solution. And for that is why this government has taken that decision to do what we are doing.
Botswana has come under pressure from conservationists who argue the decision to lift the ban will lead to a decrease in wildlife numbers while encouraging poaching. Botswana has the highest number of elephants in Africa, estimated at over 130,000, against a carrying capacity of 55,000. Five southern African countries attended an elephant summit last week. Namibia, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Angola backed Botswana's controversial plan to lift the ban on hunting elephants that was imposed in 2014. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Sidrak Franklin, thank you for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Stand up!